I do this for my culture. Peace and welcome back to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me for the second hour of tonight's show, folks. We've been talking about Florida, talking about Taco Bell. Have you noticed everything happens in Florida? Big race relation issues jumping off in Florida, man. Jeez, what is in the water of Florida? Jeez. Well, a Florida Taco Bell employee was fired after she wouldn't serve a customer who didn't speak Spanish. Oh my gosh. This is talking about Miss Alexandria Montgomery, who had a video on Facebook that she posted. Essentially, and during the exchange, she said to the former employee, "You can't take my order. You don't understand what I'm saying." And the employee is claiming that she did not understand what she was saying because she was not speaking Spanish. Even though the employee understood Spanish, she didn't speak it. So therefore, she wasn't served her chalupa with a special meat and sauce. Is this a problem? Are we at this point in America? Let's hear from our new callers today. Kim out of Windsor Mill, new caller checking in to Marion, and then we'll go to Iken. Kim, talk to me. Thank you for your patience. What's your take?
How are you?
I'm good, Kim. How are you?
She couldn't speak English, the employee, right?
Yes. Well, she couldn't. She said that because the customer did not speak Spanish, she could not serve her.
Yeah, and the bottom line is this. The employee who spoke Spanish, the business should not have had her in a customer-facing position if she could not liaise with the public in the language of this land.
Yeah.
And the issue really is, and I hear the mixed feelings about it,
yeah,
but at some point, you do have to set aside your emotions about it and just look at it from a purely business perspective. That customer had every reasonable expectation that she could be served or she could be provided a service in English in America. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
I feel, you know, listening to that, and this is the first time I heard about it when you started talking about this, and listening to that recording, that the girls in the car, to me, it rubbed me in a very, it took me to a very uncomfortable place because it is, as you said, it is a lack of, it sounded to me personally, like just a lack of sensitivity around the issue of diversity in that moment. So you have to hear somebody in the background laughing at her. Like, I just felt like that was a low or no tolerance situation, and I don't like to see it, no matter who it is or what race. I'll share that I'm African American. I did not like hearing that from another African American, and we've been put in that place too often to not understand it, right?
Yep.
But the truth is, when I set those feelings aside, just as a manager who is, I have a staff of people, I'm charged with putting them in customer facing positions, and I look for their strengths or weaknesses, I would never put any employee in a position to liaise with the public in if they could not do that in English. That's
no
doubt. Bare bottom requirement for anybody in a customer-facing position in America, in any industry, in any company, in any state in this country. So when I set feelings aside, and I would challenge other callers to do the same, the tolerance issue was there. But when you set that aside from a business perspective, did that customer have a reasonable expectation that that person who serviced her should speak English in America? Yes, she absolutely was right to expect that.
Regardless of the
community. Whether you like her attitude about it or not.
Real quick, Kim, I want to get your take on this. I guess on a side note of that, do you feel like Americans, I mean, say if it was a Spanish-speaking woman who came up to an American employee and the American employee, or rather, not American, an English-speaking employee, and the English-speaking employee said, you don't speak English, therefore I'm not going to serve you. Do you think that it's time for us, those of us who are born in this country, to be more equipped to speak the languages or to understand the cultures of other folks that are in this country?
I have to say I do. And I've addressed this even on my job. Like you see, I mean, we all know the numbers that the African Americans are no longer the largest minority in this country. We're not. It's actually Spanish-speaking people.
Right.
Yes, we're at that point now as a country. We got to realize it. But the place to address that, or the degree to which I would address that, is through diversity training. The sensitivity needs to be there for employees. I would absolutely invest in that as an employer. You've got to show, especially these younger employees, you've got to show them, you got to teach them really that this is a diverse country, diverse more now than ever. Spanish-speaking people are the largest minority in this country. That's where I would stop, though. Would I require my employees, and do I think any company should, to learn Spanish, to liaise with these Spanish-speaking people? That's too far at this point. We're not there as a country.
Unless we're going to,
you got to address. My daughter is 4.
Okay.
That's where I want that training addressed. She takes Spanish. She takes Spanish classes once a week in her pre-K.
Yep.
That's where you got to start addressing that so that they can be prepared to speak that language just as they do English, because eventually we're going to be looking at a huge minority of Spanish-speaking people in this country.
I agree.
That's where it's got to be addressed, though.
And you know what? Hey, Kim, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for being one of our new callers checking in tonight. But I wholeheartedly agree. Now, I'm going to go a little further, folks. I think that if you work in certain professions or if you work in certain neighborhoods, you should be required to speak a Spanish. Because Spanish is not a quote-unquote foreign language. It's not like Latin or Portuguese or something. Spanish is just as prevalent in America as English is nowadays. Real, real talk. All right, let's go back to the line. Marion from Windsor Mill, new caller checking in. Marion, what's your take on this? And thank you for your patience.
Hi, good afternoon, Faraji. Thank you for taking my call this afternoon.
Absolutely.
I'll make two real brief comments.
Sure.
I have to agree, I think, with the majority of callers that this was a case of prejudice. You know, particularly, as you've just said, depending on the profession or employed setting you're in, if you're working with the public, I think you definitely, at least here in America, where we are at this point, it's reasonable to expect that you are able to speak English and service all customers, even though they may not, you know, you may not be originally from here and speak English. But I think the expectation is that, you know, the customer, should be serviced. I work in public sector myself, and on any given day, one of the things that we look at are demographics, and in particular, when paperwork comes in and individuals are asked to identify their race, the majority of individuals who are of Spanish or of Spanish speaking or Latino descent who indicate their ethnicity as being Hispanic, they then also indicate their race as being white. So to Apache's point earlier, who called in, I would agree that he's spot on in his assessment in terms of not all, but a fair segment of those individuals are coming to America for economic reasons, to improve their lives. And I mean, that's part of the attraction to America. But they're coming here and they are associating or aligning themselves with white America, to garner support. And I have been in restaurants in my local area where everyone in there, from the wait staff up front to management, are of Hispanic, Latino descent. Those are my comments. Thank you. Have a good day.
Hey, you too, Marion. I thank you so much for your patience, and I agree with you. In the book White Fragility, Robin DiAngelo, the author who we had on the show, talks about the historical alignment of different groups of people who have come to this country and have decided to align themselves with white Americans because it was either economically feasible for them or culturally feasible for them, because they needed that support. They wanted the resources. And if their skin tone was closer to that of white people than that of black people, they can kind of move through society a little bit smoother, a little bit better. And there was a little bit of a pass on that. And this is not racism, folks. This is not racism. You can check the history books on this. This is what has been done in the past, and this is what continues to happen today. The issue becomes that now, beyond the color, it becomes a mentality of intolerance, right? A sickness. That's what it is, a sickness. Let's go to Akin from Bowie. New caller checking in. Akin, thank you for your patience. What's your take? Akin?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for checking in.
Perfect. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
I've been on hold for about 20 minutes, and all I can say is it's been nothing but straight-up knowledge. Thank you so much. Now, let's get to the issue.
Yeah.
The lady who served the African-American lady at the Taco Bell,
yeah.
she had no business in that position. Now, if she really didn't speak English, or if she really doesn't understand English,
yeah.
that's not her fault. It's the fault of the management who put her in that position, public facing. If you don't speak English, but you could fry chicken, that's fine. Go fry chicken. Have the people who speak English talk to customers, okay?
Mm.
Now, that being said, I'm from Nigeria. I've been in this country for over 20 years. I love it. But I was born and bred in Nigeria. And I must say this. I've had the opportunity to live around, you know, live in a few countries. And most developed nations, most of them are bilingual.
Mm.
Why not the United States?
Mm.
Look at Canada. They speak English and French. Why not the United States? Also, if a name sounds like California, that's not an English name. That's a Spanish name.
Yeah.
That's a Spanish name, okay?
Yeah.
That's a Spanish name.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, African Americans, blacks, we have a problem. We really do. Why is it African Americans, if they're not African American, if you're an immigrant, why is it most African Americans look down on immigrants? I have to say this. I'm an immigrant. I know. I've been on the receiving end. When I first came to this country and I spoke with a Caucasian person, guess what? They're interested to know, hey, how do you pronounce your name? Where are you from?
Wow.
Oh, really? Is it like this in your country? How do you like it here? How far is it from home? Do you miss home? But when I speak to African Americans, they won't even pronounce my name right.
Mm.
They won't even try. I went to Bowie State University. I had a presentation where we had name tags. My name is Akin, A-K-I-N. She said, oh, it was so difficult, so I just put an A.
Wow.
I'm like, really? Really? Are you kidding me?
She would tear really? Up my name then. Jeez, my goodness.
I mean, that mentality, you know? They say if you want to hide something from a black man, put it in a book or write it down. Because we lack the thirst for knowledge. It's so sad. We lack the thirst for knowledge. Do you know why immigrants bond together? Because they know that's how they survive. You had a caller who said a Chinese restaurant had only Spanish, Hispanic cooks.
Yeah.
Well, that's because when immigrants get here, they know it's stacked against them. So they have to pull together. Okay? That's the only way they have a chance.
Wow.
That's the only way they have a chance.
Go ahead. I'm going to let you finish your final thought.
I'm just going to say, African Americans should have a more open-minded mentality. That's all. Open-minded.
Oh, thank my goodness. Akin checking in from Bowie. New caller checking in. Akin, thank you so much for your insight, but more importantly, sharing your experience. Let's go to Shania, who's calling from Philadelphia. Another new caller checking in. Shania, thank you for checking in and for your patience. What's your take on this?
How you doing? It's actually Shania with the M.
Oh, okay. Shania, I'm sorry.
But I agree with the young man, Apache.
Uh-huh.
I actually been listening for a few months, but this is my first time actually being able to get through.
Fantastic.
But I'm 30 years old, and what I've learned is, I want to say around the time that actually 9/11 happened, is when they started forcing kids to pretty much learn a new language in school. It didn't happen, you know, at a young age or 4 or 5 or anything like that, unless you were in a private school.
Right.
If you went to a public school, you didn't start learning about, you know, you didn't have to take another language, a Spanish or a French or something like that, or a Portuguese or anything like that, until you were about to go into high school. But what I do know is You can go into a regular McDonald's. It doesn't have to be a Taco Bell. It could be a nail salon. Not too long ago, there was a grandmother and granddaughters that got beat up by Asian women for whatever the altercation was in a nail salon.
Yep.
What happens is as black people, unfortunately, when we go and see these places, they realize that we don't know how to speak these languages, or they assume that we don't have the education behind us, and then they go to try to insult our intelligence by saying things in their native speech.
Yep.
So that happens a lot, and unfortunately, like I said, I'm a black woman, so a lot of people, when I go into a store, they don't even know that I know how to speak, French or Spanish fluently, just like English.
Uh-oh.
But and I've been in a situation where somebody has tried to call me out of my name in their language, and I had to address the situation.
Mm.
But I agree with the young lady 2 calls ago, where if you do not know how to speak English, you should not be at a register or, prime example, Sprint, or, we have all these customer service lines that we can call into, and there's a foreign person on the line where we can't even get the issue across or get any help or a resolution because they don't speak a lick of English.
Mm. 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 Mm-mm. Samir, I you know what? Listening to you, it made me, and you talked about that incident in the nail salon that was broadcast on Facebook and all over the place. It made me think about that this has to be a two-step process. Like, both sides have to be a part of this process in order to get across. I'm saying it to us from one side, right? Because just like Akin mentioned, that the fact that he has been, people have looked down on him. Black people have looked down on him as an immigrant.
But that's
look how that cycle
confused continues,
right?
Because
that's historical. Right. That's historically rooted because of what has happened to black people in this country.
Right.
That comes from that place. So
when we
look
all got
at
our back up against the wall, trying to figure out who's a part of our team.
Exactly.
I understand that exactly.
And it's in a very, very real sense, it's a very sick mindset of superiority.
Right. I agree.
Because we say to the immigrant who comes over, oh, you must be less than because it's like having an abusive parent. And then you wind up having a child, and then you're the conditioning of your thinking has been so distorted that when you try to interact with your child, it's not you speaking, it's the abusive parent that spoke to you through you.
Right. Well, I can say, for instance, like I said, I'm 30 years old, and it's way harder for me as a black woman to try to start my own business versus, some of these immigrants, they're actually getting a check to open up their own business when they come to our country.
You're right. You're right. And
nobody's talking about that.
And that's something we do have to bring up. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think one of the big things, though, I've seen here in Baltimore, I don't know about Philly, Baltimore, there are families that run certain places, like families that run the cleaners, families of Asians that run, for those who run the corner stores, right?
But most Asian corner stores or mom and pop shops don't have any black people working in them.
No, they don't.
If you don't speak their language, you pretty much are screwed, and vice versa. So it's like a giver. It's a give and take on both ends, or no matter what race you are.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I think it's all pretty much racism to some degree, or a prejudice to some degree, unfortunately,
absolutely,
that we have to unlearn everything that we were taught growing up.
Hey, oh, my goodness, Shamil, you are hitting it right there. I need my Taco Bell dung. Can I get my Taco Bell sound or something? Can we get that? Because, Shamil and all it, man, so many of you. Yeah, there it is. There it is. Shamil, thank you so much for checking in from Philly. Let's go to Miss Linda out of Glen Oak. Miss Linda, talk to me. Miss Linda? Oh, looks like, do we got Miss Linda on? Okay.
You got me hungry
for
conversation.
Yes, ma'am. We got you, Miss Linda. What's your take on this?
All right. Well, you know what? I say, and I really believe, that there should not be any business that's open to the public that should not have somebody who speak English at all times. Every shift, there should be somebody who can speak and understand English.
Good point.
And you know what? All I know is that people need to, that person could have showed that person a menu to let them point out what they wanted.
Yeah. Yeah,
they could, look, let me tell you, when your heart is right, you will do whatever you can to accommodate and to understand and try to communicate some kind of way with people.
You're right, Miss.
And I'm telling you, all I know is that I pray that people, that God will create in everybody a clean heart and renew a right spirit within them, because I'm telling you, we are all on this earth together. And we better learn how to love and appreciate one another.
There it is. Miss Linda for checking
in. Right.
Thank you.
Love
I always
you.
Appreciate it. Love you too, Miss Linda from Glen Oak. Thank you so much for checking in. Let's go to Carla out of Baltimore, another new caller that's checking in. Carla, thank you so much for wanting to be a part of this conversation. What's your take on this, Carla?
I am so happy that our people are so sympathetic and understanding
okay.
to everybody else but our own. I used to live in Annapolis. Oh, I have two stories.
Okay.
I'm a Washingtonian. I went to a sushi place on 19th and L in Northwest D.C.
Gotcha.
It was almost 10 o'clock. It's really close to the end. And the waitress went back to ask the staff, could I still order sushi? They said no. She told me no, I could not. And as they walked out, every one of them were Latino. Now, Latino people making sushi, I had a problem with that. That's an art.
Wait a minute. Talk about you. Wait a minute. Hold on, Colin. Now, look. Now, if you got a problem with Latinos making sushi, why don't we have a problem with Asians making chicken?
Because sushi is an Asian art. Frying chicken is not an art that African Americans have coined.
Huh?
The Southern community makes Southern fried chicken in the South. There are white people there, too. Now, my second story is fried chicken is not ours. It's American.
Okay.
It's a Southern food.
Okay.
We can't put our name on that.
All right, Carla. Okay? I'm going to let you slide on this one. That's mad. What's your second situation, Carla? Talk
my second me. Is I used to live in Annapolis.
Right.
And in 2005,
right.
I saw an influx of Latinos come to the community.
Yeah.
And they were overflow from Baltimore, because Baltimore had been saturated with Latin Americans for years, especially in the low-income houses. They move in our low-income housing. And since Baltimore has so much low-income housing, they're pretty much situated in the east area. I've never seen many in west, but over the east, all through the area where they can work, all down past Broadway. That's where I'm familiar, all the way up to Highlandtown.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Okay. They move into our low-income housing. Next thing you know, they did this in Annapolis. I saw all the signs, all the MS-13, all the DEX, all the signs, gang signs, letting each other know that they're there. Next thing I know, they're living in a low-income housing area in Annapolis. Annapolis is very segregated.
Right.
It's the have and the have-nots. It's just like York Road up here by Loyola College. It's the haves and the have-nots.
Gotcha.
On the other side of the street is poverty. So the next thing you know, it goes from cute cuts and shapes to Anita's grocery store. They start taking over our businesses. They form communities where I don't even know if they're having meetings. Like,
but hold on, Carla. Hold on. Hold on, though. Okay, so what you're saying to me is that they move into the community. Again, we don't want to put. Wait a minute. Hold on.
African-American communities.
Huh?
Low-income African-American.
Right, they move into low-income African-American communities. But at the same time, I don't want to give the impression that just because they move in, they're going to just bring in the MS-13s. We need to clear up.
I didn't say that.
No, but you're saying that certain gang insignia is on the walls.
I saw them come into Annapolis.
Right.
I saw them put their signs up on the jersey wall as you dump into Annapolis.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I also said, not only did I see that, I saw them move into low-income housing. I saw this. I lived there.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. I was in quite a affluent neighborhood. They didn't come live in our mini mansions. They went to Bywaters and Newtown 20 and all the other places that African Americans.
So
well,
you, what, okay. what? And I'm gonna give you a couple of moments for this. But what do you, are you saying that this is an issue? Or, I mean, what
I'm
you?
I'm saying
what
that we should have been, y'all slept on this, because in Baltimore, this is the same thing. Now they own stores. Now all these Middle Eastern people own your gasoline stations,
but can't
selling
we,
your
but
kids
here's the thing,
all
though,
this
Carla.
Crap.
But here's the thing, though, Carla. Can we get mad at any group of people that have built, that have decided to take what they know to create an enterprise for themselves and for their people? Can we get mad at that?
Black people in Baltimore need to wake up.
Okay.
That's what I think.
Okay. I can
I'm
hear you.
Done.
I got you, and I appreciate you for checking in, Carla. Thank you so much. Look, we got to take a final break when we come back to Lita. Calvin, Josh, Paul, Kenneth, I want to hear your thoughts. Plus, I'm going to share what you got to say on our Facebook page. But Carla got me thinking, man. Like, can we really get mad if somebody moves into the community and open up a business? Like, if have you seen some of these dilapidated buildings in the city? But then, I mean, they can't, what, the buildings are supposed to just stay there? Come on. I can't get mad at any enterprising people. I can't. I'm sorry. I just can't do it. I think that that's the wrong approach for the wrong attitude that we should have, especially when we live in neighborhoods that are falling apart. Can you truly be mad? Can we really be mad? Look, we're going to talk about it. Stay riding with me. Whole lot coming up in the final half of For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. We'll be right back.
Do this for my culture.
Peace and welcome back to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host for Raji Muhammad. Folks, we're having a great conversation, but let me tell you about something that we want you to participate in. Make sure that your support for WEAA, and just to know that your support for WEAA is provided by Live Baltimore Fall 2018 Trolley Tour, coming to Baltimore Poly High on Saturday, September the 22nd from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Meet and greet real estate professionals while experiencing various neighborhoods. More details at livebaltimore.com. That's a great way to get to see the great communities of Baltimore and to stay in Baltimore, work in Baltimore, play in Baltimore, but most importantly, live in Baltimore. All right, folks, let's go back to the line, see what you got to say. This conversation has got people going. And let me tell you what folks on Facebook are saying. Keith checked in and said, many parts of Florida are populated by retirees and the criminals who moved there to prey on those retirees. Bad combination. Wow. Damn, I guess you don't go to Florida that much, huh, Keith? Because Mickey Mouse just don't appeal to you. Irene said, Florida is the epic center of crazy. The heat, moisture, and wildlife may be the reason everything crazy happens in Florida. Just saying. Wow, okay. Felicia checked in and said, why should I be forced to learn their language if they aren't forced to learn English? You have some people that have been here for 20 plus years and don't speak English. If you move to America, you should learn the English language, not depend on your kids to learn it, and then be your permanent translator. Wow. Papa said, ignorance is going to be our downfall, my brother. Wake up. All right. Mm-hmm. Sharon checked in and says, not all black people. Again, I would have responded the same way as you said the white people did to you. And I think it is a total lack of respect for anyone not to earnestly try to pronounce someone's name correctly. Live my life, Sharon, and you will trust me. Understand. I agree with you. Travis checks in and says, God gives everyone the same time. What are you doing with your time? My question is, what's your saving account looking like? What's your credit score and debt to income ratio? What did you do with your income? What did you do with your income tax? Mm-hmm. Anyone can get a storefront and start a carryout or convenience store. Get your money and credit together. Anyone can start a business. Where is your executive business summary and business plan? What's your credit score? The capital is there. Mm. Elaine checked in and said, great show. Love your information-based program. It's powerful. And Derek also checked in and said, I understand what Carla is saying. It's hard to see others come into neighborhoods that we've been in for years and set up shop. Black folks are still trying to get up and out. Well, I appreciate all of you for checking in on our Facebook page. Continue to post your comments throughout the end of, throughout the show. Derek, here's my thing, though. If we've been living in a lot of these neighborhoods, if you think about some of the historic black neighborhoods in the city of Baltimore, these neighborhoods are also, some of them, not all of course, but some of them are have high violent crime rates. They have a lot of major challenges, right? A lot of issues. So if we're trying to change the neighborhood, then that change has to start at some point. And if we're starting to see people move into that neighborhood, start opening up business in that neighborhood, I mean, can we really be upset? Isn't that what we say we want to do, right? If somebody is opening up a business or opening up shop in your neighborhood, how about us having a conversation with the owner and say, hey, look, what did it take for you to get to this point? How did you start opening up your business? And having a conversation. You might find that the person is, you know, very agreeable. They might give you some insights, some pointers on what it takes to be an entrepreneur. They might even hire you and say, look, you're willing to learn. I'm trying to open up a couple of different stores, but I'm looking for a great manager. You might open up, you might talk your way into an opportunity. That it's not all like us versus them. And I think this is probably one of the underlying cultural barriers that we have, right? Because we have been imposing on other people what's been imposed on us for so long that it has become a vicious cycle where we can't make any real progress. So I'm not going to beat up on the man or the woman who comes across the water and make a way for themselves. Because why? My people came across the water and made a way and still struggling to make a way for ourselves. And and the fact is, the struggle isn't just because we're black. The struggle is for a lot of other reasons. We are not working together, and the unity issue is a big struggle. Pulling out resources and connecting with the right people that are looking to do some serious business. I mean, a lot of different things are happening. But I think that we should be very, very cautious about not having a mentality or an attitude that hates enterprise and hate entrepreneurship and hate any people who want to do better for themselves in a new place. All right, let's go back to the phone line, see what you got to say. 410-319-8888. Kenneth from D.C., check it in. What's your take on this, Kenneth?
How you doing, Roger?
I'm good, Kenneth. How are you?
You know, them people ain't going to tell you nothing about how they got started. They are not going to speak to you, okay? Half of them are illegal aliens, okay?
Not if you're a business owner.
Why do we have to always accommodate everybody when no one is accommodating us?
But here's the question, though. Here's my thing, Kenneth.
Wait a minute, let me speak.
All right, go ahead. I'm going to let you speak, and I got a question.
Go ahead.
My question is, we're saying accommodate, and my thing is, we're expecting everybody to accommodate to us. If we own the community, like everybody's saying that we do, that this is our community, we're taking ownership of it, it's not them accommodating us. At some point, if our ownership is not showing, if we're not expressing our level of ownership, if we don't have any investment or any stake in that particular community, how does anybody know that it's our community?
I can't believe you're saying this, man.
I'm saying it. Just because you live there doesn't necessarily mean it's your community. You know what I'm saying? You have to take ownership of it. And if you take ownership, if we take ownership of our community, then a lot of the challenges that we're seeing in our community shouldn't exist.
Can I finish what I was saying?
Real quick. Yes, sir, Kenneth. Go ahead.
Golly. First of all, ain't nobody giving us no money when we come over to anybody's country to start no business. And you said that when we came over here as slaves, that we worked, and you know how this
goes. Of course.
You know, struggle. You know the struggle.
Right.
Now if we can't get a business in our neighborhood, then that's because we're not putting out the energy and the know-how. But ain't nobody giving us no donuts. Those people saved their money, I guess, and put to that money.
Of course. That's the nobody's giving that to them unless their property is going at such a low rate, right?
Right. But now
and they can get that. Yes, sir.
But now listen. Sure. This is going to be a big issue. You may have to do this again.
Go ahead. Come on.
But let me tell you. I used to watch since 1978 or earlier, foreigners, particularly Latinos, coming to this country little by little, more by more. You know what I'm saying? And when they come over here, they don't like the English language. They think we need to learn their language. Now, which do you ask your question? What language do you think is harder, English or Spanish?
Which language is harder, English or Spanish? Well, I was always taught, Kenneth, that English is a, pardon the expression, is a, I will say, an orphaned language.
What?
That's what I was taught. That's what I was told in school, that it was, I don't want to say the B word, but it was an orphaned language.
Right. But if somebody come into my store and if I'm working in McDonald's and a Latino guy coming in and say, porta vor means chicken. And I'm saying, well, I'm sorry, I don't speak English, but since you didn't bother to learn English, I'm going to give you a box of chicken McNuggets.
Well, I mean, look, look, the point is, and I got to let you go, Kenneth, and I always appreciate you for checking in. The point is, look, we can keep playing this game of people got to accommodate to us. But see, that's the wrong lesson, I think, that we need to convey. Because guess what? When you have children, do you teach your children, hey, son, life is about waiting for somebody to give you an opportunity. Hey, daughter, life is about waiting on some misregard. Or do you have a conversation with your children to say, nobody gives you anything in life. You got to go out and work for it. Let's be honest, right? So we teach our children a lesson that collectively we don't adhere to. That doesn't make sense. That does not make sense. Let's go back to the lines. Talita from West Baltimore, thank you for your patience. What's your take?
Well, peace and blessings, everybody.
Peace and blessings.
I hear a lot of craziness, but I'm going to let that be because the world is the world. It's not just America. You know, people are people. If people in my neighborhood, West Baltimore, want to get a business together, then they get together and start to build a business.
Exactly.
Let me tell you, stay out of the Asian stores. When I go in a store and there's no blacks in there, I don't patronize them. I don't spend my money. I don't give everybody my money because I don't have to have Chinese food or whatever they're selling. They don't have to do my nail. I can go to the businesses that I know exist and spend my money there. But I'm not angry with anybody for having a business.
No.
And all these people that, just let me say quickly, all these people that want our community, when have they gotten out of their cars or out of their groups or out of the bars or wherever they are and got out in their community and picked up some trash? Are they recycling? Mm. Are they doing something positive in their community or are they just living there?
Mm.
I'm just saying.
You know what, Talita, I agree with you. And I think that we should be very, very cautious. And I appreciate you for checking in from West Baltimore. I think we should be very, very cautious and really rethink this whole thing about our, whether we say we are a people and our community, because that is not what I'm seeing in Baltimore City right now. We're not at that space right now. As much as we want to be and as much as I really want us to be, trust me, I really want us to be there, folks. We're just not there, right? Because if you take ownership of anything, right, you're going to take care of it. That's another lesson that we teach children, right? That if you take care of it, if you truly care about something, you would take care of it. Josh, checking in from Elk Ridge, new caller. Thank you so much for your patience, Josh. What's your take on this?
Hi, Faraja. Good evening.
Good evening.
I have 4 points for you on this incident down there in Florida.
Yeah.
First, I wanted to start out by saying I agree with Apache, and just wanted to start out talking about just the communities that we have. So I agree that communities come over to the United States, and that's great. Different communities come in order to build cultural empires for themselves and their children. That's great. They should do that, and we shouldn't be mad at them for doing that as well. I would say that we shouldn't look for a rainbow coalition or for intersectionality with those communities, because as we've seen with the Taco Bell incident and the incident up in New York City, that there are problems that go along with it. But two, to the issue of Spanish. Now, I'm a fluent Spanish speaker. I travel to Latin America all the time. And whenever I go down there, I never assume that someone's going to be able to attend to me in English. I always speak in Spanish.
Yeah.
And that should be the same case here at the Taco Bell. In terms of the immigrant communities, in Latin America, you have plenty of Chinese Latino communities, and they always speak in Spanish, so it can be done. The third point about tolerance, I believe the caller called back a few minutes ago. He was Nigerian-American, and he criticized the African-American community for not having tolerance towards immigrants. Now, I completely disagree with that because, as you well know, if it was not for African-Americans fighting in the 1960s to open up the immigration policy, you would not have, I believe, his people here, and you would not have as large of an influx of Latin Americans
as well. Just real quick, Josh. I hear you, and I think, and that's absolutely correct. But then I also understand, and I know that what his experience is correct, and I think it might be more generational than it is just a broad stroke on black people. You know, I don't think that generationally that some black people understand or make that connection about those who are coming across the waters, right, and seeing them. Because guess what? Part of it is, one, history is not being taught to the fullest extent to give us that context. And then, two, you're talking about understanding people and humanity, right? So we're still going off of that old school, very, very offensive premise that Africans live in jungles.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. That we still, as a whole, have that impression.
No, I'm not saying. Let me clarify. I'm not saying that we saying that as a whole. I think that in certain generations, in our generation, not making that connection, especially for the past couple of generations, we haven't been able to make the connections and see the value, and understand the motive as to why African people have traveled the waters to come to America and have tried to make a better life for themselves, right?
Right.
So that's all. I'm just making that point.
Point on there.
Yes, sir.
And then my last point before I go, because I know you're running out of time.
Sure.
In terms of what we should do moving forward, the next time an incident like this happens, I think it's great that people are recording this on Facebook, but we shouldn't be going back and forth with people. The next time this happens, what someone should do is they should file a complaint with their local human rights organization. If she was in Miami-Dade County, it would probably be the Miami-Dade County Human Rights Commission. File a complaint there.
Yep.
Then you file suit with that branch manager, and then you file suit with the company. It's too late in the day for us as African-Americans to continue going back and forth and being disrespected.
Hey, you know what?
Stand up for ourselves,
and if that means we need to do lawsuits. Do you know why I really love that? Because, again, instead of us taking a very cultural response to a serious problem, you're saying take the problem and make it a legal response. That's how you change folks. That's how you change folks. When Taco Bell is sued, or when that employee is sued, guess what? People are going to start to change. Josh from Elk Ridge, thank you so much for checking in. It's always good to hear from you. Let's go back to Facebook Live. Paula checked in and said, good evening, Faraji. I had to pull over to respond. I want to speak on a caller who took issue with Latinos making sushi. I went to an eatery in the Pikesville area on Reisterstown Road to get a Philadelphia roll. A young Latino woman made my Philly roll. I will not go anywhere else for it. It was absolutely fantastic. While it may be an Asian art, she has learned the art very well. And she just wanted to give kudos to that restaurant. And she says, side note, I forgot to mention, this was a kosher sushi. Paula, thank you so much for checking in and sharing your response. And, you know, like I said, I mean, look, folks, when I was eating chicken, I know some good Asians that can cook up some great fried chicken. And I know what you're saying. It's not, you know, it's a Southern tradition, but I think black folks and fried chicken, we got something very special going on. If there was a relationship between black folks and fried chicken on Facebook, it wouldn't say it's complicated. It would say hearts, hearts, and love in a full, whole relationship. All right, so I want us to really talk about this, though. I'm loving the diversity of comments on this situation. Let's go to Paul out of West Baltimore. Paul, what's your take on this?
Hey, thanks for letting me ride, brother.
You're welcome.
You know, I love this topic and this conversation, and here's my thing. From the early 70s up to the late 90s, black people owned the business in the hood or in the community, okay? I grew up in Cherry Hill. The shopping center was owned black. Every store was a black owner. But somewhere along the way, they sold it. Here come the Koreans, giving them money, offering them a certain amount of money, and they sold out. So we lost the business, okay? So now, how do we get it back? Well, most of the culture now, and I'm in the field. And let me take away this myth so people won't think that these people are going to the bank and getting loans for their business. That's not how they're doing it, people. I'm in the field. What they do is four or five of them form an organization. It's what it's called. Either it's a Korean organization, Chinese organization, whatever. What they do is they put their money together and they start buying together and they build it up, okay? They are, what you call it? They, they put it where they incorporate the business.
Yep.
So now five of us get together. We take all our money and our resources. We get one piece of property. We turn it into a franchise, a restaurant, whatever. Then we start saving our money. We now go after the next one. That's how they do it. I got a guy right now on 15 gas stations. 15 gas stations. He started out by driving a cab.
My goodness.
Okay? So when you see these herb guys driving these cabs and doing Uber, and they working $14, $15 an hour, they don't go to the bank. They got uncles now who have done it for years. Their new breed that come over, they set them up in business. And this is what they tell them. Just give me a certain percentage, buy me out, and it's yours. That's what they do. Nobody's fooling with the banks no more to go and get loans for their business when they have these organizations. I'm telling you what I know, brother. Right? So the same thing that the Koreans been doing, the Chinese has been doing it, now you got the Latinos up doing it. And I guarantee you, in the next 5 or 10 years, you're going to see more Spanish establishments in the hood, in your neighborhood, while we sitting back complaining, we could be doing the same thing. We've done it before. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Paul, you know, it's always good to hear from you. Paul checking in from West Baltimore, breaking its science down, telling us how easy it is to get the ball rolling. And my hope is that as we work to conclude to this part of the conversation, I encourage you to continue to have the conversation on our Facebook page at For the Culture 88.9, on my Facebook page at Faraji Muhammad, that we understand the dynamics that exist, the historic barriers and challenges that we've had to overcome. But there is so much more. There's so much more that can be done. And more importantly, there is a great opportunity before us, folks. There is this great opportunity before us for us to start to turn the tide on intolerance, to turn the tide on injustice, to turn the tide on what we're seeing, this level of prejudice and bias and even racism. There is an opportunity, even in this little moment, right? I mean, like Josh from Elk Ridge said, if we filed a complaint, filed a lawsuit, right? If folks started to do that more, instead of just recording it, the recording is fine, but imagine the recording and then a legitimate complaint being filed with the court not in the court of public opinion, because that's what's all you're doing when you do stuff like that and you just post it on a Facebook. In the court of public opinion, it's like, man, damn, that's messed up. That's messed up. And see, that's why I don't, and that's why we should, that's the court of public opinion. That's not necessarily going to change anything. But if you were to bring, if you have 300,000 people looking at your video about an injustice or an intolerance case, right, and you decide to bring that forward, then the institution that you are filing against, in this case Taco Bell, they will start to really rethink their policy, whether it's their hiring policy, their management policy. They start to rethink some things, and it will force them to have a different conversation. Now, will it be the silver bullet? Absolutely not. However, the situation that we saw in Philadelphia at Starbucks and how that led to those guys using money to help other people and the sensitivity training, we got to use the resources that are at our disposal right now. No, they're not perfect, but we got to at least try on some cases. This case is kind of an open, shut case that we could make some differences. But all of you have all of these ideas. And that's the thing. We just have to use the ideas that we have, the knowledge that we have, pool those fantastic resources, not just money, but the intellectual ability, and start to make some differences. But I'm very serious. If we have conversations about our community, our people, we have to make sure that we are all on the same page and seeing each other as just that, that we are community members, we are people of the same, but even more importantly, that we live in a world that's just not of composed of our people. And that it's really in the best interest of all people for us to get to a place where tolerance is the eventual goal. When tolerance is the eventual goal, it removes another barrier and we can come closer together to becoming a better country. All right, folks, I thank each and every one of you for being a part of my conversation tonight. I want to thank my dynamic production team. It's Mallory Pinkett, Pierre, Alex Blanc, my production assistants, Jalen and Daryl, and my engineer, Dre Day, for making me sound so good. Make sure you continue the conversation on our social media platform at Footaculture889 on Facebook and Instagram. And also email us at Footaculture889@gmail.com with your suggestions and feedback. Up next, stay tuned for In the Groove with Miss LaDawn Black, giving you that cool jazz for your evening. But always, never be afraid to challenge what's wrong. Stand for what's right while being yourself in the process. I look forward to having another great set of conversations with you tomorrow on For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM. And make sure you download all of our latest podcasts from our website at WEAA.org. All your latest For the Culture podcasts are right there on the website. Definitely check them out, share them, and continue to listen to For the Culture here on WEAA, which is absolutely the voice of the community. And remember, Baltimore, do more, but be exceptionally good for the culture. Peace.